Puertas and Sugar Fetchdeques and Audience. So I'll be talking about entanglement entropy in the ON model. But since this is quite a technical subject, let me try first to give you a bit of a motivation for what we are doing. So let me remind you that most of our present understanding of phase transitions is based on the venerable Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson paradigm, which was originally developed in the context of classical thermal phase transitions. And in this approach, we distinguish phases of matter by their symmetries. And then at a phase transition, we have spontaneous symmetry breaking. So given a pattern of spontaneous symmetry breaking, we can cook up a corresponding local order parameter. And once we know the symmetry of the order parameter, we know the universality class uniquely. Well, such an approach has been a useful starting point for trying to understand quantum phase transitions as well. However, now we understand that the class of quantum phase transitions is probably far richer, and there are some examples that do not fall into this Landau-Ginzburg paradigm. So perhaps we should at least develop a complementary viewpoint. And to a certain extent, you know, thinking in terms of quantum phase transitions in a classical language might not be ideal for some purposes, since these quantum critical states are some of the most quantum states of matter. As I'll argue, they are some of the most entangled states of matter. So one idea is to try to characterize phases and critical points between them via the entanglement properties of the many-body wave function. So let me remind you how we quantitatively characterize entanglement. So we start with some system and consider its ground state wave function and corresponding density matrix. And now we divide the system into two subsystems, A and B. And to characterize entanglement between these two subsystems, we form the reduced density matrix for subsystem A by tracing over the degrees of freedom in subsystem B. So now generally, if A and B are entangled, then this reduced density matrix describes a mixed state. So we can diagonalize it and obtain a spectrum of eigenvalues, which is known as the entanglement spectrum. So this spectrum contains a wealth of information, and I will not try to access all of this information in my talk today. Rather, I'll focus on a single quantity, which is the entanglement entropy. So this entanglement entropy is nothing but the von Neumann entropy associated with this reduced density matrix. And this object, I would say, is some inherently quantum mechanical, non-local observable, which one can contrast with usual objects that we compute, such as correlation functions of local operators. So such an object hopefully will provide us with a nice complementary viewpoint of quantum criticality. Now, before we study this object at quantum phase transitions, let's first try to understand how it behaves away from critical points in a general gapped phase of matter with a finite correlation length. So if the correlation length is finite, then we expect that entanglement of the wave function is also short range. So then most of the entanglement between A and B will be concentrated near the boundary of these two regions, so that one expects that the entanglement entropy will scale as the area of the boundary. And this is known as the area law. Well, you know, this picture, on one hand, is quite intuitive. On the other hand, it's telling us something very profound about ground states of local Hamiltonians, because if you look at a generic state in the Hilbert space, its entanglement entropy scales as the volume of the system and not the area of its boundary. So this is telling us that ground states of local Hamiltonians are very special, and in fact they form a set of measure zero in the Hilbert space. And that, to a certain extent, is the basis of all the numerical approaches that we heard about yesterday. Okay, so now that we understand the scaling of entanglement entropy when a finite correlation length is present, let's attack a somewhat more complicated question of behavior at the quantum critical point. And here we have a very powerful result in one spatial dimension for a class of critical points which have linearly dispersing excitations. So such critical points are described by conformal field theory, and we can utilize the power of conformal invariance in 1 plus 1 dimensions. So for such systems, there is a famous result due to Calabrese and Cardi, which says that if you look at the entanglement entropy of an interval of length L, it scales logarithmically with the interval length. So that at a quantum critical point, entanglement is essentially long range. There is entanglement on all length scales. Moreover, the coefficient of this logarithmic term is universal. It is related to the central charge C of the conformal field theory, which is one of the most important characteristics of this CFT. So I believe that this universality of behavior in one dimension was originally one of the reasons for excitement about entanglement entropy and its study at critical points. Now let me at this point mention that we can also perturb the critical point slightly away by a relevant operator developing a correlation length, and then this logarithmic divergence with the subsystem size is cut off by the correlation length, as one expects, and one recovers the area law. It doesn't depend on the microscopics of the Hamiltonian. As long as my phase transition is in the same universality class, then okay, so now, inspired by this very remarkable result in one dimension, let's see what the situation is in higher dimensions. And here we are immediately faced with a disappointment, namely, in higher dimension, for systems which are described by local field theories, it is believed that even at the quantum critical point, the entanglement entropy still satisfies the area law. That is, one cannot distinguish, in terms of scaling, the non-critical phase with a finite correlation length and the quantum critical point. Moreover, the coefficient C of this area law at a quantum critical point is non-universal. And that's very simple to understand. The entanglement entropy is a pure number, it's dimensionless. But the area of the boundary is dimensionful. So to get a number, we must normalize out by some length scale. But at the quantum critical point, the only length scale is the short distance cutoff. So then this coefficient C will be sensitive to short distance physics and will be non-universal. Now, let me briefly mention that there is at least one system that I am aware of in dimension larger than one where this area law is violated. And that's a system basically of free fermions, a system with a finite Fermi surface. And in such a system, due to the propensity of low energy modes on the Fermi surface, the area law is enhanced by an additional logarithm. But such a system is not described by a local quantum field theory, so I will not consider it in my talk. Okay, So having seen that the leading contribution to the entanglement entropy in higher dimensions is non-universal, and by leading, I mean always leading in subsystem size, in terms of scaling, let's try to look for universality in subleading terms. And here I'll be guided by the principle that any contribution to entanglement from long distances will be universal, while short distance contributions can be non-universal. But short distance contributions are essentially local to the boundary between the two regions. So any non-universal terms will come together with coefficients, which are integrals of some geometric quantities over the boundary of the two regions. In particular, one can think of the area law as just integral of 1 over the boundary. Okay, so then we have this kind of scaling ansatz for the entanglement entropy, where it starts with the area law, and then there are some subleading polynomial corrections, all of which are non-universal, until we come to these two last terms. So there is possibility of a logarithmic term with a coefficient g naught, which would be universal. And finally, at the end, this series terminates with a finite piece, which is a function of the subsystem size over the correlation length. And this term is expected to be universal up to possible additive contributions from the logarithmic term. In particular, if the logarithmic term is absent, then this finite piece S0 is expected to be completely universal. Yes. I'll speak about this in a second. So if you have corners, then G naught is non-zero. So then there are these possible additive contributions from the corners. I'll speak about this in a second. Well, this ansatz, in a sense, is motivated by the fact that you expect that you can absorb all the non-universal physics into some into the coefficients of some terms which live on the boundary of the two regions. And then basically this is the only thing that you can come up with. But this is, to a certain extent, an ansatz, and there have been very few calculations, I'll talk about this, which have confirmed this. All the calculations we have are consistent with this ansatz.
I'm sorry, the square root of...
Because it has a mixing between short distance physics and long distance physics, log squared. I cannot absorb the short distance physics into some into something coming from the boundary.
Okay, I'll ask you later. Thanks.
Okay. Right. So now there is a certain situation in which this ansatz simplifies a bit, which is that of a straight closed boundary. So think of a cylinder, for example, which is cut into two pieces by a straight circular boundary. Then the boundary doesn't have any geometry of its own. The only geometric quantity on it that one can construct is the area of the boundary. So then all of these subleading terms here, which are non-universal, except for the area law, must drop out. In particular, then this coefficient of the logarithmic term, g naught, will be zero, and then this finite piece at the end, S naught, will be completely universal. Now, I say that this is the form for straight closed boundaries. However, it's also believed to be true for smooth closed boundaries in dimension equal to 2. And that's the case that I'll be concentrating on in my talk. Now, for completeness, let me mention that there are some situations when g naught is not equal to 0, and when you have this subleading logarithmic correction. And that corresponds, known cases correspond to boundaries with corners or endpoints in two spatial dimensions. and to boundaries, smooth boundaries with curvature in dimension equal to 3. But I'll not consider these cases any further, although they're interesting in their own right. Okay, so let's look at smooth closed boundaries in dimension equal to 2, or actually, I will want later to resort to expansion in dimension, so I say dimension is between 1 and 3. Okay, so now, in this case, we have this finite universal function of system size over the correlation length. So if I go to the critical point and send the correlation length to infinity, then this function just becomes a constant, which only depends on the geometry of my subsystem. So this universal geometric constant I call gamma, and this gamma captures the non-local entanglement present at a quantum critical point. If I was to look in a trivial gap phase with a finite correlation length, then there would be no such subleading constant correction to the area law, and gamma would be 0. Yes?
How do you define something smooth on the lattice?
Okay, it's a good question. I believe that we should just take, you know, how do you draw things with that? Yes. I believe, so the story for a straight boundary, I believe, is on a much better footing than the story for a curved boundary. Okay. So, right. Yes?
You said gamma is always expected to be 0 if you're in a gap phase?
If you're in a trivial gap phase. Okay. I'll say something about topological gap phases on the next slide. Okay, and oftentimes, I get questions about how do you actually separate this subleading constant term from the leading area law term? Is there really a clean separation? And here I always like to give an example of an analogy in the theory of classical phase transition, where you can look at the free energy of a system on some closed manifold, such as a torus. And then the leading contribution to the free energy scales with the volume of the system with a coefficient which is non-universal. However, there is this constant subleading correction, which is a function of the geometry of your manifold, which is universal. It's known as the Friedman-Fischer correction to free energy, and its presence has been confirmed both theoretically and by Monte Carlo simulations. So in terms of scaling, the universal geometric subleading correction to the entanglement entropy is a very similar quantity, in my opinion. Let me also mention that the only corrections to this scaling form are expected to be corrections to scaling, which decay as some power of the subsystem size L. Okay, so here let me briefly mention the relation to massive topological phases. So generally, if I look in a phase with a finite correlation length, then I expect this subleading correction gamma to be 0. However, there are some topological gap phases where gamma is non-zero, and in this case, it's related to so-called quantum dimension of the theory. For these cases, there's also a nice property that gamma is actually independent of the geometry of your subsystem, whereas at the quantum critical point, gamma will definitely depend on the geometry. Okay. So now, coming back to this scaling form when the critical point is perturbed by a finite correlation length, I have this general function of the subsystem size of the correlation length. And let me now take the limit when the subsystem size is much larger than the correlation length. Then I expect to recover the area law. However, now the coefficient of the area law can have two contributions. It can have the old contribution that it had at the critical point, which is non-universal, and now this the coefficient of this contribution can acquire analytic dependence on the deviation from the critical point. But now it can also have another contribution, which is universal, which is related to the fact that now we can measure the area of the boundary in physical units of the correlation length. So then one gets an additional contribution to the entanglement entropy, which we call the correlation length correction. And this correction depends non-analytically on the deviation from the critical point. That's a way to distinguish it from the analytic non-universal piece here. And the coefficient of this correction R is universal. Now, when I say it's universal, I mean, first you have to define what you mean by a correlation length. But once you have this definition, then R becomes universal. Well, you can define some spin stiffness. I mean, you just need the scale to normalize your area. Yes. One has an analytic dependence on the deviation from the critical point. Yeah. Okay. So coming back to the question that I was already asked, you know, I basically waved my hands a lot and shown you some ansatz, but how do we know that it actually holds? And there have been three classes of calculations that have been performed that have all confirmed this ansatz and the presence of universal subleading corrections. These three classes are as follows. Calculations in free relativistic theory, both free bosons and free fermions have been done. Second class of calculations is calculations at very special multi-critical points in two spatial dimensions whose static correlation functions reduce to those of a classical two-dimensional conformal field theory. And an example of this is the Rorschach-Kivelson point of the dimer model. And Eduard Dufratkin, I believe, will be speaking about this subject later in the week. And the final class of calculations is calculations based on the holographic ansatz exploiting the ADS-CFT correspondence. So all of these three classes have taught us a lot, I believe, about scaling of entanglement entropy. But nevertheless, somehow I would say that all of these calculations are non-generic. You know, either you're in a free theory or at some multi-critical point. So it would be nice to do a calculation of entanglement entropy in dimension larger than one in an interacting system. Yes?
The calculation for trick to yes. Be valid. So is this the problem, or what's the status of the replica trick in these calculations?
Well,
it's like a kind of a Rennie entropy calculation.
Yes.
With a limit to
yes.
One.
Yes. All of the calculations are based on this. Replica trick, and ours is as well. I'll talk about this in a second. I believe that at present there are no issues known for this replica trick, at least for the entanglement entropy.
Okay.
There is no evidence that something is going wrong. But I'll talk more about this. Okay. Right. So we'd like to do a calculation in a generic interacting theory. And we pick the simplest example we can come up with, hydrogen atom of quantum phase transitions, namely the ON model, the quantum ON model. So this is a theory that describes spontaneous breaking of an ON symmetry. That's the name. And it involves an n-component order parameter phi. And the theory has two phases, a phase where ON symmetry is spontaneously broken by a expectation value of the order parameter and a gap phase with unbroken symmetry. Now, this model is realized by a number of microscopic Hamiltonians. For example, for n equal 1, it corresponds to a transition in the transverse field Ising model. For n equal 2, it's the continuum limit of the Bose-Hubbard model at integer filling. And n equal 3, for example, is realized by a bilayer antiparamagnet on a square lattice. And some of these models even have experimental realizations. So now, on the theoretical side of things, we understand this transition pretty well. There are two complementary expansions that we can use. There is the epsilon expansion, that is expansion about the upper critical dimension, and there is a complementary expansion in the inverse number of components of the field. Okay, so now let me tell you what we calculate and what our results are. So first thing we calculate is this universal geometric subleading correction. But first we have to pick a geometry to calculate it in. So we pick the simplest geometry possible. We take an infinite cylinder, and we divide it into two semi-infinite subsystems along a circular boundary. Now, unfortunately, we cannot quite use periodic boundary conditions along the compact direction for technical reasons, but we have to resort to these twisted boundary conditions. Nevertheless, this is not expected to change the physics very much. It's just a technicality. Let me mention that recently there have been some numerical calculations using tree tensor networks of this subleading universal correction in the transverse field Ising model by Guifre et al. And in this case, the geometry used is a half torus geometry instead of a half cylinder. So direct comparison at this point is impossible, but at least, you know, their results are also consistent with the presence of this subleading constant correction.
Yeah? Zero modes of the field? And,
yes.
And the universal
that's exactly the reason why we use this
right. The universal term you're after, you were saying, depends. I mean, it characterizes long distance physics.
Yes.
So you might think removing zero modes is a dangerous thing to compute such a term?
Well, if you had zero modes, then the value of the gamma would be different. But essentially,
I'm computing a function of phi.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, notice that essentially there is entanglement at the critical point over a length scale, which is the length of this boundary. So as you send the length to infinity, there is still long range entanglement. Okay, the second class of corrections that we calculate are these correlation length corrections. And here we just take our system and divide it into two semi-infinite parts along a straight line, and we calculate this correlation R. As I said, R is related to the definition of the correlation length, but in the ON model, there's a very natural definition, which is just the inverseness gap. Okay, so let me jump immediately to the results. Here, we demonstrate the presence of a finite subleading universal geometric correction, gamma. We calculate it in the epsilon expansion, and here is the answer. As you see, there is some fairly involved dependence on this twist phi along the compact direction, and I will not discuss this dependence here. Rather, let me draw your attention towards a different surprising aspect. Namely, this is the value of gamma at the interacting fixed point of the theory, at the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. However, you can also look at the value of this universal correction in the non-interacting theory at the Gaussian fixed point. And we know that the two fixed points merge as you send the dimension to the upper critical dimension, as you send epsilon to zero. In particular, all the critical exponents have the same limit. They tend to mean field exponents as you approach the upper critical dimension. However, this correction to the entanglement entropy has different limits when epsilon goes to zero. So that's quite a surprise. In a sense, you know, entanglement entropy is strong enough and observable to differentiate this to fixed points already at leading order in epsilon. Similarly, we can look at the correlation length correction to the entanglement entropy. And here we have the same situation. The value of R at the Gaussian fixed point and the Wilson-Fischer fixed point is different. Let me also mention at this point that the coefficient R of the correlation length correction is negative, which tells you that entanglement is actually largest at the quantum critical point, which confirms your general expectation that the quantum critical state is the most entangled state. Now, in addition to the entanglement entropy proper, we also calculate the Rini entropy, which is related to the nth moment of the entanglement spectrum. Why do we calculate this object? Well, because we have it for free. Because the way we calculate the entanglement entropy is by first calculating the Rini entropy and then taking the limit of n going to 1. But in terms of its properties, the Rini entropy is expected to be quite similar to the entanglement entropy proper. It's some quantum mechanical non-local observable or object. And its scaling properties are very similar to those of the entanglement entropy. So in one dimension, it's known that this quantity scales with the logarithm of the subsystem size with a universal coefficient, which is now dependent on the index n. This index n is known as the replica index, by the way. And in higher dimensions, it's expected that the Rini entropy satisfies the area law and has this universal subleading corrections, which now, again, become functions of the replica index. Okay, so we calculate this Rini entropy, and we find some surprising results again. So basically, you expect your entanglement entropy and Rini entropy to count the number of degrees of freedom in the system. For example, in one dimension, both were proportional to the central charge of the theory, which is kind of a measure of the number of degrees of freedom. And similarly, in the Oyen model, you naively expect these quantities to be proportional to n when n goes to infinity. And that's what you would conclude from a kind of naive large n expansion. However, if you carefully apply a normalization group and resum your large n expansion, you actually find out that this coefficient of the correlation length correction to the Rini entropy scales as n squared. That is, there is a violation of the large n counting, and this violation is related to non-commutativity between the n to infinity limit and the correlation length to infinity limit. Now we have computed this coefficient Rn in the large n expansion explicitly. Here are some values. And we hope that these results will be eventually compared to results of quantum Monte Carlo, as Roger will talk in the next, in the next 45 minutes. Now it's possible to extract the Rini entropy in lattice Monte Carlo simulations using a clever trick. Okay. Another surprising finding is that these coefficients of the Rini entropy are actually non-analytic functions of the replica index. And this goes back to the question that I was asked earlier. So in fact, gamma n and rn have a discontinuity as a function of n for a value of n away from 1. There's essentially a phase transition as a function of this replica index. So this discontinuity only occurs in the limit of infinite subsystem size and in the limit of correlation length going to infinity. If you fix the subsystem size, both are analytic functions of the replica index. So it's indeed like a phase transition. However, this phase transition occurs at a value of the replica index away from 1, such that if you want to take the limit and calculate the entanglement entropy, you're safe. There is no subtlety there. Yeah.
See, so if you take the limit of correlation length going to infinity with the radius finite, you're actually one dimension less, right?
But when I say correlation length to infinity, I mean the correlation length of the three-dimensional or of the two-dimensional model. That is, you know, the correlation length if you are not on a cylinder but on a plane. The correlation length that would be infinite. I mean, when you are on a cylinder, you always have a finite correlation length along the long direction. But this is kind of a geometrically induced correlation length compared to.
There should be a difference between r smaller than the correlation length in the 2G and r in the other order.
That's right. So this S naught, remember I had a function S naught, it was a system, it was a function of subsystem size over the correlation length. And when we calculate the correlation length correction, we always take the limit of subsystem size larger than the correlation length.
Maybe another, I mean, think of Xi here as just another proxy for the coupling constant. Mm-hmm. There's some coupling constant in your varying that you can measure in the infinite system size and related to the correlation length. So this is just the dependence on the coupling constant. The actual, as Max said, the actual correlation length of the finite geometry is something completely different. which can be computed, but that's just...
Okay. Right. So, you know, all of these surprising results, let me briefly tell you how we obtain them. So first of all, we have to realize that we shouldn't compute the entanglement entropy directly, but rather compute the Rini entropy, and then analytically continue to n going to 1 to get the entanglement entropy proper. Now, there is a prescription that the Rini entropy is given by the partition function of the theory on an n-sheeted Riemann surface divided by the partition function of the theory on a one-sheeted Riemann surface, that is, on usual space, raised to a power of n. So let me kind of illustrate the geometry for you. So we start with, let's first start in the real space. Let's divide our system into two subsystems, A and B, along some boundary. So now, if I wanted to compute the partition function, I have to go to one higher dimension. I have to introduce the temporal, the imaginary time. So that's what I do here. And if I was just computing the usual partition function, that's all I would have to do. But now if I'm computing this nth moment of the reduced density matrix, there's an additional subtlety, which is that in my d plus one dimensional space, there is now a conical singularity at the boundary between the regions A and B. That is, if I go around the boundary, I have to go around n times in order to come back to the same point. Okay, which is precisely the statement that I have to perform the calculation on an n-sheeted Riemann surface. Now it's now clear why calculations in one dimensions were so simple. Because in one dimensions, one can conformally map the n-sheeted Riemann surface onto a one-sheeted Riemann surface, onto a usual complex plane. And then one can go from there. But in higher dimensions, you can still map, but it's no longer conformal. So you screw up your metric. So in higher dimensions, you have to perform explicit calculations on an n-sheeted Riemann surface, which is quite quite technically involved. Let me briefly wrap up here. I see that I'm running out of time. So basically, you know, you have a theory for which you have this epsilon expansion or 1 over n expansion, But now you have to do them in this funny geometry with a conical singularity. Well, that's not really an issue, except that it's technically difficult. But there is an additional subtlety that this finite geometry, the presence of the conical singularity, can induce some so-called boundary operators. And there can be new scaling associated with these boundary operators that you have to treat. And that's very similar to what happens in the theory of classical phase transitions, where if you have a boundary, you can have different boundary universality classes, so-called ordinary, extraordinary, and special universality classes. So similar thing happens in the present case. If you have a conical singularity, there are different universality classes associated with operators living on the boundary. And all of the subtle features that I have been talking about, the non-analytic dependence on the replica index, different limits as epsilon goes to zero of interacting and non-interacting fixed points, all have to do with these subtleties associated with the boundary and with essentially ways to impose conformal boundary conditions at the conical singularity. Just to illustrate the technical complexity that goes into our calculations, we have to actually calculate the beta functions of these boundary operators to two-loop order. And you know, this would be even fun with plane geometry, but now you have to do all of these calculations on this funny geometry with the conical singularity. So we had lots of fun with this. Well, let me conclude with a kind of to-do list. I have only considered the critical point and the gap phase in my talk. It would be nice to extend the results into the symmetry broken phase, and in particular calculate some universal amplitude ratios that one expects to be there. There are also some details of physics at the upper critical dimension to be sorted out. There are some additional logs possible when one is at the upper critical dimension in the scaling ansatz. Finally, as I mentioned, in the cases when the boundary has corners, one expects these universal logarithmic corrections to the entanglement entropy. And calculations of such corrections probably are technically quite difficult, but perhaps just possible. And let me now conclude by saying that we have demonstrated the presence of universal subleading corrections to the entanglement entropy in the OON model. We found many unexpected results, non-analyticity in the replica index, violations of naive large N counting, and we hope that some of these results will be eventually checked by lattice simulation. Let me conclude with a kind of broader picture, which is that, you know, we have demonstrated the presence of universal subleading corrections, but we don't have very much intuition for what these corrections represent. In one dimension, you know, we had this logarithmic law with a coefficient which was the central charge, which was something very fundamental. Well, here, we don't know what gamma stands for and what if it's related to something as crucial. So that you know, any connections would be great, but that's for future. Thank you.
In one spatial dimension, the ON model is very different for n less than 2 and for greater than 2. I mean, you see that entering in anywhere, it wasn't obvious from the stuff I saw.
Well, I mean, all of our calculations are in two spatial dimensions. If you were in one spatial dimension, then, you know, you would be... if n is larger than 2, then you are always gapped. So your correction gamma, well, first of all, you don't have a critical point. Secondly, your subleading correction gamma is always 0. If you have n equal to 2, then you have the Kosterlitz-Tauless transition, and you know, it would be interesting to calculate subleading corrections to the entanglement entropy there. There is in principle.
You know, people do this all the time. With the sigma model, right? The expansion around equals two. It's usually two plus epsilon.
So here you can also do a 2 plus epsilon expansion. We actually had some, but it's not to capture properties in two dimensions, but to capture properties, well.
In three, yeah.
Yeah.
So since the area law comes from here, close by the entanglement, is it characteristically say that these corrections are coming from more distant?
Yes, exactly. All of these universal corrections are from long distance physics. Kind of scales of order either of the correlation length, which is going to infinity as one approaches the critical point, or of order of the subsystem size L.
No more questions? Okay, so let's thank the speakers.